Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Golden Black Radio as we take a look at this week in Purdue Athletics. Here's your host, Kyle Charter.
Thanks to an 8-0 start, the best resume in the country, the Boilermakers are number one in the AP poll. How'd they get there so quickly, and what's next? Plus, Purdue football knows its bowl opponent and destination. All ahead on the Golden Black Radio podcast. Kyle Charters here with Brian Duber, Tom Deanhart. By in a couple of seconds, getting to this podcast today a little bit late due to my flat tire. Thanks for hanging in there, though, Brian. Appreciate it.
Shrewd move of you to wait till the AP poll came out.
Yeah.
So that we can stop talking in hypotheticals.
Yeah, I had a flat tire intentionally to delay the recording of our podcast today until after the AP poll was out. I went through all of that, so I'd have a legitimate excuse just to push back the pod.
You're playing 3D chess here, buddy.
So Purdue is number one. I think that's not surprising. Perhaps a little bit surprising that it was unanimous. Everyone agrees. Purdue is the number one team in the country. I actually thought that Purdue would reach this spot at some point this season. I did not think it would come quite this soon, but Purdue has played well. Some other teams have taken some losses, and now the Boilermakers have the target on their back. They're the number one team in the country.
Yeah, but I think it's obviously very important. I'm not trying to rain on everybody's parade here because I know this is a really big day for Purdue basketball, but they still got to keep getting better. I mean, this needs to be the this needs to be perceived on their end as a step, not an outcome. And I think that, you know, the final 10 minutes of the Iowa game the other day, I think, ought to reinforce that message very, very clearly to everybody involved. They have to keep getting better defensively. I don't know if they'll ever be a great defensive team, but they need to be better than they have been. I think they're moving in a positive direction, but they need to take better care of the basketball. They need to not be so casual with the ball because that kind of thing can get you beat. And, you know, they came awful close to really having to really being in a bad spot at the end of that Iowa game. And what would have been, you know, quite possibly the worst loss in program history. I know that's probably overstating things because there have been some NCAA tournament losses over the years that have been worse, but that would have been really, really an unfortunate evening for Purdue had that gone a little differently there in the last couple minutes. Purdue just needs to, again, in no way, shape, or form view this as, hey, we've arrived, because it is a long season, and, you know, November and December rankings are meant to be punchlines, you know, months later. That's kind of the nature of a really, really fluid game. And, you know, Purdue just needs to, you know, stay on top of things as best they can, not celebrate too hard, not take anything for granted from here on out, because the name or the number in front of their name, it has never appeared there before, you know, that kind of thing. I'm sure that will be the coach's message to them. If they even talk about the fact that they're number one in the country, they might not. Yeah. I don't know. But that's the way Purdue needs to move forward, obviously, in order to make this the sort of season that the start of this season has suggested it could be.
Yeah, we all know Baylor won the national championship last year. I would imagine the people in Waco will remember that for a really long time. I don't think there's very many people who remember who the number one team in the country was the first week of December of last year, and so that would be part of my message, I would imagine, to Purdue. You mentioned the Iowa game. Of course, the Boilermakers got the Big Ten opener on late on Friday night. You're aware that it was late on Friday night and almost into the morning on Saturday. That game lasted forever. You know, the Hawkeyes did some things to – yeah, there were a lot of fouls. The Hawkeyes did some things to make the Boilermakers sweat that thing out in the last 10 minutes. Did Iowa show other teams a path to potentially beating Purdue?
Well, if if teams want to decide to just change their defensive systems and start backcourt trapping, maybe, but
yeah.
You know, not everybody does that. And the next time Purdue sees it, Purdue's going to be ready for it. Not to say they weren't ready for it on Friday night, because this isn't new what Iowa did. It's just, I think, when the game came around, you know, some guys who'd never probably had to do it in a game before at full speed or whatever, did do the right things all the time. And I think this will, or ought to anyway, raise everybody's awareness in terms of how to handle this kind of thing. I don't think it's a systemic issue for Purdue. My guess is it's a one-off deal that you'll never hear from again, because Purdue has the personnel to beat this kind of thing. Purdue knows what it's doing. It just didn't do it.
Yeah.
I know that sounds illogical, but I think that it's a good learning opportunity for Purdue. And again, when we talk about whether or not Iowa just gave everybody the blueprint for how to beat Purdue, well, Rutgers doesn't do this. You know,
right.
I'm not sure how many teams in the Big Ten really do a whole lot of backcourt trapping, pressing, whatever it might be, unless they're down 20 in the final few minutes of the game.
Right.
That kind of thing. So it's not like this is something you're going to see every game, and it's going to be something everybody left on your schedule can replicate if need be. But Purdue's guards have to be better than they were the other day, but everybody on the floor has to be better than they were when they see it again, because this isn't just a guards issue. This isn't just Isaiah Thompson and Eric Hunter bringing the ball up the floor, or Jaden Ivey, whoever. It's everybody on the floor. It's kind of a team-wide deal. You have to do the right things away from the ball. You have to do the right things with the ball, et cetera. And I'm certain that this will be a really good learning opportunity for Purdue. But the other part of it, too, is Purdue had, I don't know how many turnovers, but like five of them were because of the backcourt trapping. A bunch of them were because of just general casualness and throwing the ball straight out of bounds, you know, maybe getting a little too cute, maybe mishandling the ball, general passing and catching stuff that should be relatively easy to clean up. And that's what I was getting at before when I said Purdue's got to use this whole number one thing to sharpen the knife and be as good as it can be every time out, because you're just asking for trouble when you turn the ball over too much. And as players and coaches always talk about, when you have number one, you know, next to your name, everybody you play against is going to, you know, play really hard. So if Purdue doesn't hold itself to the standard of being number one, then all of its opponents are going to hold them to that standard, and Purdue's going to have to either match it or lose to somebody eventually.
It's a couple games in a row, and you said it just now, that you felt like Purdue's just being a little too cute with things. And you know, we say that sometimes within the context of, like, I'm sitting there watching, and I'm like, could we not do that with the passes, you know? And then you look at the scoreboard, and they're up by 15. And so, you know, you got to keep that in mind
and
a little bit, too. But
that's been one of the few red flags with this team, is you would worry about things coming too easy for them offensively, to the point where they would assume things will come easily for them offensively, but also that would take their eye off the ball from a defensive improvement perspective, because Purdue has been so good offensively that the worry you might have, and this is simply theoretical, I'm not necessarily saying that this had happened yet, but you just worry about teams like that just thinking they can go out there every single game and outscore everyone, because they've been able to do that.
Right.
Even against Iowa, when you didn't play great on offense, you shot only like 43% or whatever it was, you turned the ball over too much, you still end up with 77 points in your first Big Ten game. That's not a bad number. I didn't think they played great against Florida State from an offensive perspective, and they still damn near scored 100. This team just has so much going for it from an offensive perspective that they have to make sure that all the other stuff is what defines them, and not necessarily just their ability to go out there and score 90 points more often than not. Kind of the point I'm trying to get at here is this number one thing can't be a mask of everything that's still kind of potentially boiling under the surface that could get them beat eventually by somebody they probably shouldn't get beat by. So this needs to be a step and not an outcome for them if they want this season to be something that they want it to be, as opposed to just, you know, a period of time spent as number one.
Right. Yeah, some of that cuteness, in my opinion, is like almost a result of boredom. Like the offense is coming to them so easily that they're just doing things that you're like, eh, do we really need to see you do that? No, not really. But you're up by 15 and the offense is just going too easy. So why not try something else? You know what I mean? But that you can't play that way against Baylor or Duke or Gonzaga or whoever. This is not going to work.
They call it playing with your food.
Yeah.
When you just kind of, I'm not necessarily saying Purdy was screwing around, but if you ever get to the point where you're screwing around, it's not a matter of not being able to beat Gonzaga and Baylor and Duke or whoever else is that way. It's a matter of being able to beat Wisconsin and being able to beat Rutgers
right.
at their place. It's a matter of being able to beat Indiana when you are the far better team this year. That's where you win Big Ten championships, and that's where you blow number one seeds, is you go somewhere on a sleepy Wednesday night and you get too cute or too casual and you end up losing a game you shouldn't lose. That cost Purdue a Big Ten title years ago with that loss at Wisconsin. I don't know what all went into that. I don't know if that was Purdue getting too cute or just it not being Purdue's night or them being checked out mentally or whatever it was. But that's the nature of the beast, is when you're in this position, that has to be your standard. You have to be really, really good every time you're out. And your worst game, you know, still needs to be good. Your best game needs to be elite, but your worst game still needs to be good enough to win. And that's going to be the challenge lying ahead for Purdue here, is to not take themselves too seriously and to keep holding themselves to the highest standard possible, keep improving in the areas where they need to improve, and just kind of not blow this, because this is a great opportunity for them as a program. Obviously, it's already yielded something unprecedented in program history, and there's a lot more ahead that could join this little superlative here, but it's kind of up to them now to make the most of it.
Purdue's got a lot of basketball players. You never know exactly who is going to play the role of hero on any given night, and usually it's going to be more than one guy. But, man, Mason Gillis has had enough games now to get his legs back underneath him, and Purdue certainly needed him on Friday night. I thought he was the difference in Purdue getting that victory.
He was. He absolutely was the difference. And he did it by just trying really hard. I mean, I think he had 12 points on 3 shots or something like that, because they were fouling him, trying to keep him off the glass. Stretch of the game there at the end was when Purdue was hanging on for dear life. Tregon Williams misses a 1-1. But Mason Gillis ties up the offensive rebound, keeps possession with Purdue, and then Tregon Williams misses around the basket. Mason Gillis gets fouled, fighting for the rebound, makes 2 free throws. That was where the game was won, that instance right there. But you just go back to the first quarter, the first half. He got a hand on an offensive rebound just by trying hard and kind of tipped it right to Tregon Williams for a layup. Obviously made his 2 threes. I think he's going to shoot a really high percentage from 3-point range this year on pretty low volume. But this is a guy who's making threes, he's making free throws, and he's trying really hard. And, you know, I've talked a lot about kind of the puzzle coming together and how this is all fitting together and how this guy's making this guy better and that guy's making that guy better and things like this. And I think there are guys on this team who have opportunities to be elite role players. And I think Mason Gillis is absolutely one of those guys, because the spark he can provide you just with his physicality, just with his motor, and just with his ability to knock down an open shot, I think that can be a huge difference maker for Purdue all season long. And I think, as I said about him last year, his value, I think, comes out more in in Big Ten games, and it is one for one on that front here because obviously his first Big Ten game this year was his best game. But I think him, yeah. Ethan Morton, Isaiah Thompson, I think these are guys who can all be almost ideal complementary players around the stars and the standouts Purdue has, and just the overall mix they have going. They can be huge pieces of that. And that's kind of what this is all about, is not just assembling talent, as we all know. It's about building a team, building a cohesive unit, building a unit where all of these guys function well together. And I just think you have seen that come together for Purdue way quicker than it normally does. You've seen Caleb First, too, fit perfectly with this team because what he does fits so well with the big men he's playing next to, with Jaden Ivey's ability to push the ball in transition, things like that. His just kind of basketball identity of not necessarily being having to be a high-volume guy, but being like a high-motor garbage man type of guy. Everything's coming together for this team in terms of just the whole picture, and that's why they have such an opportunity ahead of them here, is because so far this season is playing out almost ideally in terms of the results on the floor, but also how this thing has come together thus far.
Thanks, Brian.
God, I just ramble.
No, it's good. I mean, there's two different kinds of rambling. There's just rambling to ramble, and then there's rambling with a point. And at least you're hitting the ladder there. So
it's a fine line I walk, isn't it?
Thanks, man. We'll talk to you.
All right. See you.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll bring in Tom. We'll talk a little bit of football. Yeah, that's still happening. We'll do that coming up next on Golden Black Radio. On the far end of Main Street in downtown Lafayette, you'll find East End Grill, industrial and classic. The restaurant is built like a steakhouse, but handles like a bistro. East End Grill's menu includes creative starters, simple chopped salads, burgers, fresh fish and steaks, and the signature shrimp and grits. The staff prepares every item from scratch and emphasizes simple meals that incorporate fresh, local, and seasonal ingredients. A warm and inviting dining room features a cozy bar that includes a great selection of craft beer, inspired cocktails, and a robust and expanding wine list. Whatever your entertainment needs are, a cocktail at the bar, dinner with family, or a special event in the private dining room, the energized and attentive staff is here for you. East End Grill in downtown Lafayette, welcome to our table. As we blitz into 2021, JFQ Lending is extending an exclusive offer for Golden Black members to take advantage of historically low mortgage rates. JFQ Lending will cover any out-of-pocket cost for an appraisal when required. In addition, it will cover the underwriting fee of $1,365. JFQ Lending has a Better Business Bureau A rating with more than 2,000 reviews. It works with top lenders to do the hard work of finding the best deal for you. If you're curious whether refinancing your mortgage is a good decision, reach out to Andrew Hogberg today. Call 480-478-0257 or email Andrew at ahogberg, A-H-O-G-B-E-R-G, at jfqlending.com. Gridiron Metalworks is your go-to for grill grates and griddles and home and office decor branded to your favorite team, Purdue. Browse the designs that incorporate Purdue's logo and the Boilermaker Special in stainless or carbon steel, as well as other outdoor goods such as planters, flower pots, and fire pits. This is your solution for the hard to shop for and even featured on Purdue alum Brian Cardinal's grill. Visit gridironmetal.com.
Welcome to Golden Black Radio as we take a look at this week in Purdue athletics.
Hi, with Tom to talk a little bit of football. The Boilermakers selected to go to the Music City Bowl, a return trip after Purdue was there a couple of years ago, though we all forget about that one. Purdue, in this instance, will take on Tennessee out of the SEC. Tom, what did you think about the destination and the opponent?
Good opportunity, Kyle. I mean, anytime you can square off versus a team from the Southeastern Conference, just a tremendous chance to measure yourself, right? I mean, that's hailed as the best conference in America, and if you want to be the best, you got to beat the best, and here Purdue gets another shot at a team from the Southeastern Conference, a Tennessee team that was sort of on the ascent under their first-year coach, Josh Heupel. So plenty of storylines to keep fans interested in this matchup, which looms and will take place December 30th down there in Music City.
Yeah, I think probably the biggest storyline is the offenses for both teams, right? I mean, both are capable of putting up a bunch of points. It might be the first to 40 or 45 that wins this game. Purdue defensively, I think, is better. I mean, it's hard to tell when you're looking across conferences, but Purdue, at least statistically, appears to be a better defensive team than Tennessee. But, man, both offenses can move the ball up and down the field, though they do it in a little bit different ways.
Yeah, Jeff Rom talked about that volunteer offense during his presser on Sunday, Kyle. It's going to be something they've never seen this season. They go at a quick pace, a quick tempo. They want to get off as many plays as they can, and it's going to be an adjustment, something they're going to have to prepare for. So they'll have 15 practices here coming up starting Friday to start getting ready for that volunteer offense. Their quarterback, Hendon Hooker, he's going to be a handful, a real dual threat to the trigger man of that offense and really makes it go. So you're right. If you like offensive pyrotechnics, points, yards, there could be plenty of them down there in Nissan Stadium.
The news that came out from that presser with Brohm on Sunday was probably news that we all saw coming. David Bell and George Karloftis will not be back for the Boilermakers next season. They will head to the NFL, as they should. Karloftis likely a first-round draft pick. Bell, if not a first-rounder, probably more likely a second-rounder. You know, I guess the decision then for those two guys is whether they play in the bowl game. My personal feeling is I don't blame them if they don't play. I mean, I'd like to see them play again one more time as Boilermakers, but with everything that's on the line, with the, you know, potential for injury, you know, things like that, I think my tone has sort of changed on this over the years, that I understand if guys don't play.
Oh, I've got no problem with it at all, Kyle. I don't know how you can play, honestly. As much as people love bowl games, right, they're just really glorified exhibitions. It's crazy to think you had the pinnacle of your season. What's supposed to be the pinnacle of your season, guys, your best players don't even want to play in it. That tells you what everybody thinks of these bowl games. Now, college football playoff games, that's another story. The players were projected to go early or just declared for the draft, typically playing those because they actually mean something. So, you know, your Karloftis and Bell have done enough for Purdue, I think, over the last 3 years, Kyle. They've given everything they've gotten, emptied their buckets, so to speak, and playing one more game isn't going to make or break their legacy at all. Like you said, it would be nice to have them, right? Make beating Tennessee a lot easier. But again, like you, I wouldn't be shocked if these guys don't play. I really don't expect them to play either. So a handicap for the Boilermakers. But again, for a guy like Karloftis, who I saw just today, Kyle, I think it was Mel Kiper or Todd McShay had him like as a number 7 overall pick in the draft. You're talking about multi-million dollar signing bonus. David Bell, why not a first rounder, probably a second or a third rounder. So again, these guys got a lot at stake here, and no sense really taking any risk by playing in this bowl game.
The other personnel question for Purdue is Aiden O'Connell. He will play in the bowl game, we would suspect. We don't know whether that will be his last game as a Boilermaker or not. I've sort of operated with the feeling that he will be back for 2022, but that decision is not yet either made or official. Right? Or maybe
yeah,
won't
you're
be.
Right. Yeah. Well, Jeff promised that we should hear something in the next couple of weeks as far as O'Connell's status, what he's going to do for next season, if he's going to come back and use a sixth year or not. Boy, if he comes back, that sets Purdue up pretty well for next season, I think, having a veteran quarterback like that as your trigger man. Versus a schedule that's very manageable. So, again, we'll find out here soon, it sounds like, probably before the bowl game, what O'Connell's plans are going to be. I'm like you, maybe I'm leaning toward having O'Connell come back. I think he needs some more experience. It depends on what he wants to do with his life, I guess, you know. He's a unique guy. He's not on social media at all, so he's not going to be tweeting out any heartfelt thanks or trying to draw attention to himself. It'll be interesting to see how this news gets out when it does occur. But, again, a great player, a great kid, who I think all of us hope returns for 2022. And also, Kyle, of note yesterday was Jack Plummer. You know, last Tuesday he jumped in the transfer portal. We all thought he was adios, had packed his bags and left Tippecanoe County, but I guess he's going to stay with the team through the bowl game. So that says a lot about Jack Plummer, I think. Just to still have him want to be part of this program through the bowl game, can't hurt to have another veteran like that on your sideline when you're taking on the Vols, for sure.
Well, yeah, I didn't even know you could do that.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Like, wait, what? But it does tell you, it tells you a little bit about Jack, I think. It tells you about his relationship with Purdue also, that he is willing to stick around for another game in case Purdue would need him, or if he's part of the game plan, you know, offensively, as he has been at times, even as the backup quarterback. But, yeah, I didn't know he could do that. I had no idea.
Yeah, you know, we got guys have hopped in the portal and hopped back out. We've seen that before. Committed to schools, and you can change your mind and go to another school because you don't sign any letter of intent when you're in the portal. You can still be recruited up from the point where you enroll in your other school. So it's a little more of fast and loose, I guess, in the portal with the rules of binding to places. So, like you said, says a lot about Purdue and Plummer that their relationship certainly isn't fractured, and Jack still wants to be part of the team.
Yeah. All right, thanks, Tom.
Take care, buddy.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll put a wrap on this podcast that's coming up next. This is Golden Black Radio.
It's time to boiler up and join the Bronze Squad by gearing up with the best selection of Purdue apparel in stock only at Follett's. Visit the Black and Gold Mine store across from Mackey or Follett's Purdue West on State Street for the best game day apparel from Nike, Columbia, Champion, Cutter and Buck, and more. Shop Follett's late on game day weekends. Follett's has been your Purdue game day stop since 1945. If you can't make it to the game, shop online at FollettsPurdue.com.
Often, things are worth more than they seem. For Purdue grad and NASA astronaut Jerry Ross, incredible value was found in the Purdue Alumni Visa, not just because of the exclusive Purdue card designs, but for the unlimited cash back and out-of-this-world Visa benefits. Discover the official Purdue Alumni Visa credit card. Apply today at PurdueFed.com. Purdue Federal Credit Union. Belong where you have worth. Federally insured by NCUA.
Experience unparalleled comfort, service, and cuisine at the Whitaker Inn. This Midwestern oasis is perfect for a relaxing staycation or weekend getaway. Escape from the ordinary at the Whitaker Inn.
Welcome to Golden Black Radio as we take a look at this week in Purdue athletics.
Well, Purdue is the number one team in the country this week. Be sure to check out more on that at goldandblack.com, along with reaction from Purdue's selection there in the Music City Bowl as it takes on Tennessee at the end of this month. All right, that'll do it for our podcast for this week. Thanks to our sponsors, as always. And for Brian Newbert and Tom Deanhart, I'm Kyle Charters. Thanks for listening. This is Golden Black Radio.